Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast. The podcast recommended by 4 out of 5 dentists for their patients who chew gum. I never took a statistics class, so I'm not really sure what that means. But we're all very excited about it around here, and it'll probably end up on a t-shirt and in our marketing materials. This week on the show, a little movie I like to call Gone with the Wind. Stay tuned. Okay. Gone with the Wind. Gone with the Wind. Yes. Gone with the Wind. What can I say about Gone with the Wind that hasn't been said before? I don't like it. There, I'm going to get that right out in the beginning. I don't like this movie, and I don't see what all the excitement is about. But I suppose we could end the review right there, but I have hopefully a few interesting things to say about it and some observations. I've been mulling over what I'm going to say for about a week, and you'd think that given the amount of preparation time that I've had, that I would have come up with something incredibly concise and profound, and that's probably not going to be the case, because I've gone back and forth on what I wanted to say and how I wanted to say it, and well, what it comes down to is it's Gone with the Wind. It's freaking Gone with the Wind. It's a big movie in just about every sense of the term. It's 4 hours, so it's big in the, I guess, the physical sense. And believe me, as far as I'm concerned, you feel every minute of that 4 hours. It's also arguably one of the most classic movies of all time. I mean, it's for better or worse, it is out there, and it is one of those movies that everybody's heard of. A lot of people know something about, and a lot of people are very opinionated about. Most of them like it, and I don't fall into that category. So I've been trying to figure out a way to describe what it is that I don't like about it without weighing everything down and being a real downer about it all. I'm just going to jump right in, and I think that's the best thing to do. Jump right in and explain my biggest issue with the movie, and then hopefully we can get to some of the more fun stuff. Personally, I find this movie to be one of the biggest pieces of racist claptrap this side of a Klan pamphlet. Okay? A Klan recruiting pamphlet. Let me give you an example, because I actually wrote this down. This is from the opening of the movie. So, you know, you've got, this is another one of those movies that opens with an overture. And I don't know how long the overture lasted, because I just fast-forwarded right through it. Because I don't need to sit there and look at the word overture on a screen while a bunch of music plays, waiting for the actual movie to start. Then you've got the credits, and then you get, I'm sure there's a technical term for this, but I don't know what it is, but it's basically a narrative, but it's not done in voiceover, it's the words that appear on the screen. So whatever you call that, that's what this is. And the first thing you see on the screen after the credits is the following couple of sentences. There was a land of cavaliers and cotton fields called the Old South. Here in this pretty world, gallantry took its last bow. Here was the last ever to be seen of knights and their ladies fair, of master and slave. Look for it only in books, for it is no more than a dream remembered, a civilization gone with the wind. Okay, that's nothing wrong with the introduction, except for that it's BS. That's what it is. They got the master and slave part right. But I just can't, you can tell from this opening and from a lot of the stuff that happens in this movie, it's backed up again and again and again. This movie is a wistful look back at the pre-Civil War South and its society. It wishes that it never would have gone away. And that is my fundamental thing that I just can't get past. I understand the motivations of the characters and that they're acting in a manner that is consistent with somebody who came from that environment. I don't have a problem with that. The characters are being true to themselves. The thing that I have a problem with is that the movie itself, the storyline, seems to look back at this pre-Civil War era as this beautiful place where all the women wore pretty dresses and they were all covered in frills, and the men were manly men who wore fine clothes and read the Bible to their families every night and smoked cigars while the women slept, and it was just this fantastic world that somehow, for no apparent reason, the Northerners had to sweep in and take away from them. That is it. Now, maybe the book is different, and I have never read the book, but that's how the movie plays. I've heard people say, well, the book is better, blah, blah, blah. Fine. I'm reviewing the movie. That's how the movie plays. And I know a little, I am not a history expert, but I've read a little bit about the Old South. And I don't think it was all about pretty frilly dresses, and I don't think it was about wonderful men reading the Bible to their families. It was a society built on slavery and hypocrisy and oppression. And I have no wistful view of that to relate to. I can't relate to anybody who wants to relate to the beauty of this long-lost world, this gallant world that was swept away and is now gone with the wind. So I just can't get past that. And call me new-fashioned if you must, but I have a point of view that was born in the latter half of the 20th century, and I just don't I just can't look back on this and wish that things had never changed. I'm glad they changed. Good riddance to the Old South, okay? Sorry to any Southerners out there who are listening who may disagree with me, but that's how I feel. I have nothing against, I don't want to get any more into it than that. Let's just say that I can't get past that. Now, as a movie, assuming I do get past that, getting into the movie itself, the plot line, the characters, the thing that makes a movie, I have to say that I find Scarlett O'Hara to be one of the most, the biggest pain in the asses that I've ever seen on a movie screen. She annoys me from the word go. And I have no other way to describe it. This woman starts the movie as she's an annoying schoolgirl, a selfish young woman who is playing all the guys for whatever it's worth, and she's manipulative, and she always gets her way. And the one thing that she doesn't get is this guy, Ashley Wilkes, who's her next-door neighbor, who's the guy that she believes herself to be in love with for most of the movie. She doesn't get him, but she gets pretty much everything else that she wants, and she is solely driven by selfish motivation. Okay, 4 hours later, and I think it's like 12 years in the history of her life later, but 4 hours of movie time later, she hasn't changed one bit. She is the same annoying, selfish piece of work that she was in the beginning of the movie. She goes through a war. She gets married 3 times. She watches people around her dying. And yet, somehow, it's all about Scarlett O'Hara. Am I wrong for being annoyed by her? I really don't think so. If I met a person like that in real life, I would not want to invite them over for dinner. I wouldn't want to know them. I wouldn't even Facebook friend that person, okay? So now Scarlett is, and it's her movie. It's her movie. Rhett is the other main character, but I would say that good old Rhett is probably in 30 to 40% of the movie, because he shows up and then he's gone again, and then he shows up and then he's gone again. And it's really all about Scarlett. And when you have a movie that is based on a character that you can't stand, it becomes very painful to watch. Now, I know this podcast is going to run a little longer than I usually want to, want them to go, but I have to get this off my chest. This is therapy for the 8 hours of my life that Gone with the Wind has stolen from me, because I've seen it twice now. And never going to get those hours back. Rhett Butler, Clark Gable, of course. I've seen Clark Gable in three movies now, all of which won Best Picture Oscars. And he's annoyed me in two of them. And so I really don't get what the point is of Clark Gable either. He annoys me in this one. Even if he didn't annoy me as a character, he would annoy me by association because he's in love with Scarlett O'Hara. And she annoys me so much that it overwhelms into everybody that likes her, as far as I'm concerned. Rhett Butler is the kind of a guy that occasionally says something that makes sense. And the rest of the time, he's just being roguish in that kind of 1930s movie way. But he's not really being roguish. I find somebody like Errol Flynn can be roguish and likable. Clark Gable doesn't strike me as roguish and likable most of the time. And he doesn't really strike me that way in this movie. So those are the two main characters. Then we have Ashley Wilkes, who is, Scarlett thinks is the guy that she spends her whole life chasing, but really she chases him because she can't have him. And, you know, she gets everything she wants. He's arguably one of the nicer characters in the movie, but he's, you know, you talk about a piece of vanilla cardboard. It's Ashley Wilkes. I can't imagine why anybody would be chasing this guy around. He's, he's nice enough, and that's about all he has going for him. And I guess he's good looking, if he's what you're into. But there's nothing that is magnetic about him in this movie whatsoever. And then one of the other main people is Melanie, his wife, played by Olivia de Havilland, who has been great in other movies, and I like her a lot. But in this movie, she is the good gal to the point of annoyance. You know, she's the kind of a person that you could run over her leg in your car, and she'd be like, "Oh, that's okay, don't worry about it. You know, it happens." Everything she does is like that, and at some point, you just want to see her blow up at somebody. You know, but she never does anything wrong. So she's, you know, even as a good guy, she's a two-dimensional character as far as I'm concerned. Then there's Mammy, who is, she's a slave, and she's the woman who apparently raises the kids, and she's pretty entertaining. She kind of tells it like it is, but this woman suffers clearly from Stockholm Syndrome. Because one of the recurring themes in Gone with the Wind, even after the slaves are freed, is that really the only good darky, and that's the word they throw around in there, is the one that stays with their overlords, even when they're not getting paid and after they've been freed. The rest of them are just troublemakers. They're uppity troublemakers. And, in one of my favorite scenes to dislike, the movie shows the evil carpetbagger, the only thing that's worse than a northern soldier, the carpetbagger coming down the road in a wagon, and there's a white guy and a black guy in the wagon, and they're riding together, and the black guy looks like royalty. And I'm sure that happened a lot in the post-Civil War South, right? You know, they're riding around and they just look like they're, you know, some guy, they just landed from on some private jet from some grand tour of the world. So this guy's riding in there and there's some soldiers who are on the losing end of the war, obviously, walking down the road, and one of them is severely injured, and the guy turns and says, "Please, sir, could my friend ride in your wagon? He's severely injured and he can't walk." And they just say, "Get out of the way, rebel!" And they basically run him over. So this is, of course, because they're the evil North who took away the beautiful, gallant civilization that everybody knew and loved, except for the people who were oppressed by it. But Mammy is interesting and she's fun, and she tells it like it is, and is maybe one of the only people in the movie worthy of any kind of respect as far as I'm concerned. The rest of the movie, you know, let me get to the good part of the movie. I will say this. There is a good part to this movie, and it's the cinematography. If there's a star that I can hang on when I'm watching this, and hopefully I'm not going to watch it again. Twice is enough. But if there's one thing that I could hang on and enjoy in this movie, it's the cinematography. The cinematography is excellent. There are some iconic scenes with glowing red skies and people silhouetted in the foreground. There's a famous crane shot that they've stolen in other movies. I know they basically used it in Titanic and things like that, where, you know, the camera pulls back to reveal, you know, what looks as just like a few bodies laying there. And then it's, you know, hundreds and then thousands just scattered over this wide area. And it's very impressive. And the crane shot is beautiful. The cinematography is genuinely good. So if you're a film student or intensely curious, go ahead and rent this movie. I can't stop you. But if you're anybody else, or if you're me, I'm going to give this movie a strong verdict of skip it. I'm not doing this to be contrary. I wanted to like this movie the first time I saw it, but it's just never worked for me, and I don't think it's ever gonna. That's just the way it is. Next week, let me pull that down a little bit. There we go. Next week on the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast, we're going to be looking at Rebecca. And this is an unusual movie because it is apparently the only Alfred Hitchcock movie that ever won Best Picture. So I've never seen this one before, and I'm looking forward to it. Should be pretty good. Rebecca is the movie. I'm Pete Pollack. This is the Big Noisy Bug Movie Podcast, and you can always reach me at movies@bignoisybug.com. See you next week, everybody. Have a good one.